Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Tomorrow is Veterans Day. And as we think about those who serve and have served and would like to serve, we have an opportunity to talk to three very special guests to begin the program today. For those for whom that is in doubt, we will talk about some of the individuals the Commander-in-Chief, President Trump, has announced will not be welcome, those in the process of or having already transitioned from one gender to another. When the president tweeted in July that he would direct the military to overturn the previous policy of acceptance, civil rights lawyers responded, and four lawsuits are making their way through the courts. The first of those had initial success when U.S. District Judge Colleen Colocatelli issued the preliminary injunction on October 30th, blocking the change of policy. And I am joined now by the two lead attorneys in that suit, Jennifer Levi, director of GLAAD's Transgender Rights Project, and Shannon Minter, legal director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. And joining by phone for at least a short time, we're joined by one of the plaintiffs, Dylan Cohier, a first-year student at the University of New Haven and a member of its Army Reserve Officers Training Corps, what you know as ROTC. Welcome, all of you, to the program. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
And do we have Dylan on the line? Dylan, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi there. Thanks so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about why you've chosen a military career and the ROTC, first of all.
Something I wanted to do.
You know what? This is obviously not working technically, so let's see if we can get Dylan on a better line. And let me bring in the attorneys. Jennifer, you want to start? Talk about the arguments in court and the round that you've won so far.
Yeah. Well, as you said, President Trump tweeted that transgender people would not be allowed to serve in July, and within a month of that time, the White House codified that decision and said that transgender people would not be allowed to serve or be allowed to enlist or commission in the military. And so we brought a case challenging that on equal protection and due process grounds. And the basis of our legal argument is that people who are qualified and capable to serve should be allowed to do so, and that there was no military justification for excluding people. And that was the basis of the judge issuing a decision that prohibits the military from discharging transgender people or prohibiting them from enlisting.
So, Shannon, where does this stand now? Because it's not resolved, right?
It's not finally resolved, but the ruling from the D.C. Federal Court judge has brought a stop to any enforcement of President Trump's ban while that case proceeds, and there's three other cases that are going forward as well. So we don't yet have a final resolution of this, but we do have some very important temporary relief for transgender service members.
And listeners, our phones are open for anyone who is transgender, anyone most specifically targeting here who is or has been a transgender person in the military, or anyone else. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for attorneys Shannon Minter and Jennifer Levi as we talk about this case and this policy. Jennifer, where does the policy stand now? Because it doesn't seem necessarily like President Trump and the defense secretary agree.
Well, the policy that the White House issued was that transgender people could not be allowed to serve or enlist, and that's the policy that has now been banned by this federal district judge.
And on the politics of it, Shannon, if, you know, this goes up the chain in the courts and they are allowed to do it, do you have a sense of the politics? Is this making people in Donald Trump's cabinet roll their eyes and up and down the chain of command in the military, by and large, roll their eyes and try to push back against it, or not so much?
Look, you know, we really don't know the views of the senior military leadership that are in place right now. But what we do know is that the military itself is the one that carefully studied this issue about whether transgender service members should be allowed to serve. They took more than a year to do that. It was like this incredibly comprehensive process. They looked at every bit of relevant research and data and talked to all kinds of different experts, medical experts, personnel experts, military readiness experts, and they came to this very strong conclusion that there is absolutely no reason not to let transgender people serve openly in the military. So that was the military's own view. And what is really clear is that the reversal of that open service policy is, as I think you're suggesting, that was just based on a purely political decision. President Trump did that because he is catering to parts of his base that really don't like transgender people. And that the military should not be toyed with in that way. So even though we don't know exactly what military, you know, Secretary Mattis, for example, thinks, I'm pretty confident that no military leaders like to see military policy being made in that political way.
Yeah, and Jennifer, I wonder if there's a legal argument around that. If you can demonstrate with evidence that Trump did this because the Russia investigation was bearing in on him, or he was doing other things that were making him politically popular, and he took this move not out of any calculation of, you know, unit coherence or whatever the claims are, but really as a matter of political defense rather than criterion about military service. Is that a legal argument?
It absolutely is a legal argument. And one of the things that the judge was very persuaded by was the extraordinary way in which this policy was changed. It was abruptly reversed. The argument that the government has tried to make is that it doesn't have any evidence. In fact, all the military evidence is to the contrary of the suggestions that they've raised now about challenges that are created by transgender people in the military. So both the absence of any military justifications and the highly unusual way in which this very serious military policy was changed suggests that there's an illegitimate reason behind excluding transgender people. And in fact, it reflects bias, which is not constitutionally permissible.
And speaking of unit coherence, I think we have our plaintiff back, Dylan Cohere, a first-year student at the University of New Haven and in the ROTC there. Dylan, I think we have a better line now. Let's start over and tell our audience about why you've chosen a military career and the ROTC in college.
Well, growing up, it was kind of something I always thought about doing. It was always a huge passion of mine. Something that always really resonated with me. I wasn't always sure why when I was younger, but, you know, it's just something that I always wanted to do. I remember, you know, when I was little, growing up, my parents always really stressed thanking service members, you know, and shaking their hands when they were in public. So that was another thing that just added to the factor of, you know, me wanting to do that, just because I had so much respect for people in uniform. And it was really about me giving back to a country that, you know, gave to me for 18 years of my life. And it's just something where, you know, I wanted to be a part of something that was bigger than me.
President Obama only last summer made the final move from Don't Ask, Don't Tell for trans individuals already serving. Had you already decided on a military career, or how aware were you that there were impediments to serving until that recently?
It was, you know, I was starting to actually consider taking on the military as a career at that point. You know, I was probably around a junior in high school. So I really started to, think about, you know, what I was going to do with the rest of my life, what I was going to do after high school, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, having them lift that ban initially was something that just, you know, made me sure that this was something that I wanted to pursue, and it really gave me assurance as to, you know, continuing to move on in my life and pursue this kind of career through, you know, college and the ROTC.
And what's your status right now as regards the ROTC? When the president issued his tweet in July, did your status in the program change or get threatened, and then it got reinstated when the court made its ruling blocking the policy, or have you been, you know, you and your officers there have been removed from all of these politics?
When I first went there to start partaking in, you know, everything that they were doing, you know, they knew that I was transgender. I was open about being transgender, and I just made it be known because it was something I wanted to make sure there would be no issues with. So when I initially gave them my information, this was before Trump had sent out the tweets. So when I initially gave them my information, you know, I let it be known that, you know, I was transgender and that I did entirely, you know, plan on being in the program fully. So after these tweets came out and the policies, you know, started being enforced and changing and all that, I was pretty much told that, you know, I wasn't really allowed to be a part. I wasn't allowed to be enrolled in the program. So where I am right now is I'm what they call a classroom cadet, which means the only things that I can do, it's limited to the classroom. So I take, you know, a weekly class, you know, learning about, you know, basic leadership roles, that kind of stuff within the military. But I'm not permitted to partake in the physical training they do 3 to 4 times a week in the morning. And I can't participate in the labs that they do, which is where they kind of put everything that we learn into the in the classrooms, like into action and figure out how to actually do them.
Wow. So, Shannon, here's one of the implications of the president's desired policy, which we probably even haven't heard much about. You know, besides the people already on active duty, here are students in ROTC all over the country who are being batted back and forth as to what they can even do in their programs.
It's terrible. This Dylan's story is so important because it does illustrate that aspect of this issue. And we've got these idealistic young people who want to serve their country. They want to participate in ROTC programs, and they're literally being told, no, you are not welcome here only because you're transgender.
I know we have Dylan only for another 3 minutes, and then he's got to go. Anything, Jennifer, maybe you want to bring him out on?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, Dylan lives in a dormitory with other students who are participating in ROTC, and he spoke very poignantly, and I'm very moved by the fact that in the morning when his roommates go to physical training, he goes by himself to the gym, and I think it's terrible. You know, it's not something that any young person should have to face, much less somebody who aspires to serve their country in the military.
How's your relationship with those fellow ROTC students? How much do you have to explain? How much do they find your transgender status weird and you have to deal with their perception of your weirdness? How does that go?
Honestly, I haven't had any issues with any of the people that I dorm with. All of them are very accepting of my and what I stand for, that I'm standing my ground and that I'm fighting for this because it's something that I've always wanted to do. You know, I have all of their backs because, you know, they've seen what I'm physically and mentally capable of. And they know that, you know, I belong there just as much as any of they do. So I've really had nothing but support from, you know, not only the guys that I dorm with, you know, the entire cast, platoon of, you know, fellow cadets. So, like, it's really been such a supportive place where even though a lot of them, there's only so much that they can talk about because, you know, they are trying to contract and, you know, there's only so much they can talk about politically, I know that, you know, deep down in their hearts, they all have my back and, you know, they all want me there with them.
Dylan, thanks so much for giving us some time. Good luck in college. Good luck, hopefully, in the military. Thanks for joining us on WNYC.
Thank you so much.
And we continue with the two lead attorneys in the lawsuit trying to stop Donald Trump from stopping transgender Americans from joining or participating in the U.S. Armed Forces, attorneys Jennifer Levy, Levi, director of GLAAD's Transgender Rights Project, and Shannon Minter, legal director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Our phone number is 212-433-WNYC. And Diana on the Upper East Side, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
My pleasure. My name is Diana Montford. I'm transgender. I do the Diana Montford Show on cable television. It's a transgender show, primarily transgender. I want to thank wonderful, brave Dylan and all the brave young people who are in the military and will not stand for prejudice, and the brilliant, brilliant attorneys who are doing this wonderful work. God bless you. Thank you so much. And as it happens, tonight we're filming the Day of Remembrance to air on the 16th, which is when we read a list of murdered trans folk. And one of the guests reading that list is Ms. Tanya A. Walker, who is a veteran and transgender. And she was on when this story first broke on our show about, you know, the unfairness of it all and the cruelty, the gratuitous cruelty of it, and the way it was basically a red herring to distract from Russia. But I have no question. I just want to thank you, Brian, for always highlighting transgender concerns and the brilliant attorneys and the brilliant young people. Thank you so much.
Diana, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
It's not really known how many transgender individuals are on active duty, is it? I've seen counts, Shannon, ranging from 2,500 to over 15,000.
Right. We don't know the exact number, but that's the range that people have come up with from estimating incidents in the general population and all that. But, you know, I want to pick up on something Diana said. I'm so glad she mentioned that this is Veterans Day, because one thing we do know from research is that there are a lot of transgender veterans, and the research actually has shown that if you look at just the number of transgender veterans, it appears that transgender people are significantly more likely to serve in the military, as possibly as much as twice as more likely than others. And transgender vets have played an incredibly important role in the transgender movement. And we've gotten so much support from transgender people who have served our country. And if it wasn't for them and their record of service, our case would be a lot harder than it is. But we're always able to point to the fact transgender people have always been in the U.S. military, and they have served with an incredible distinction.
Is there anything like using Veterans Day tomorrow, celebrated today? A lot of people are off from work and able to listen today because this is Veterans Day observed. Hello to all of you. Any movement, like considering what's going on now, for former service people who are not out as transgender to come out on this particular occasion?
You know, I think it's a great idea, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think honoring our vets, all of our vets, is very important on Veterans Day. And I just wanted to pick up one other side of this, which is that this change in military policy is bad for the military as well. It's destabilizing. And what has been so powerful to me in working on this case has been hearing from military leaders, including all of the former service secretaries who submitted declarations in the case, who spoke about the fact that the military is built on a meritocracy, where people who are capable of serving should have the ability both to serve and to advance in those positions. And what President Trump has done is to undermine the basic premise upon which the military's strength lies. And it sends a message to others in the military that they will be valued not based on their contributions and on their abilities, but on arbitrary characteristics relating to who they are. So this change in military policy bears a deep harm not just on transgender people who have proudly and courageously served and who are overrepresented as veterans, but really, really harms and destabilizes the military as well.
Robert in Reading, you're on WNYC. Robert, thank you for calling.
Oh, no, thank you. Good morning, everybody. I have a question that I have to ask maybe before I get into what I'm thinking, and it's this. Do you think that there is anything, when someone is a transgender, is there anything challenging on them mentally? In other words, they're challenging their own being, if you will, for where in the directions that they want to go in. Is there anything mentally going on there that's, you know, of a concern of anyone? I want to just ask that first and foremost. Can anybody help answer that a little bit?
Sure. No, that's a great question. I think it's a very natural question to ask. So the situation with transgender people is, yeah, it can be stressful to not be able to be yourself. So the only real stress or, you know, mental stress involved in being a transgender person arises when that person is not able to live according to their gender identity. They can't be the man or the woman that they know themselves to be. So it once somebody, and this is part of why the military changed its policy, because they recognized this after looking at all the, you know, all the medical literature and talking to folks, that, you know, what's that the best thing both for that individual and for the military itself is to let people be who they are and let transgender people come out and serve openly. And once you do that, any mental stress goes away.
Robert, are you asking a different question, though? Are you asking, is it should it be seen as a psychological disorder to want to change from the gender that you were born as?
I guess I'm leading to that, yes, and I don't want to upset anybody saying that. I'm just being perfectly honest when I'm speaking right now. My nephew was trying to get into the Air Force. Now, he's a straight-up male, no issues with the gender thing. But he had a lot of trouble getting in, believe it or not, from a wart. It was on his knee. I mean, we're talking like lots and lots of testing, and just almost didn't get in, literally almost did not get into the service because of a wart.
They had to make sure his knee worked for action, right?
What's that?
They had to make sure his knee worked for action, right?
Well, it was just a simple wart skin on the surface, but they did some extensive research, and there's a whole lot of hoopla. But finally he got in. But my question is if there is something that is, you know, mentally challenging for someone, and I as an outsider, I'm not transgender, I as an outsider look at this and think, you know, maybe there is something that's mentally upsetting to them for the situation that they're in.
Robert, we really appreciate your call. And Jennifer, I think, for better or for worse, he speaks for what a lot of Americans probably wonder.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. And, you know, part of the revision of military policy that had formerly excluded transgender people was to develop policies, including of admission and service, that applies the same criterion for service and eligibility and deployment to transgender people that applies to all others. The change was that people previously were categorically denied from serving regardless of their ability to serve. That now transgender people, prior to Trump's changing policy, could serve as long as they could otherwise meet all of the eligibility and service criterion, and that was true for people joining and also people in active service.
But it goes to part of the fundamental fight that you have on your hands, that transgender is not a mental health issue.
Well, I think it goes to the fundamental fight that we have on our hands, which is that people misunderstand the experience of transgender people and presume their inability or their incapacity to serve. And it's that misunderstanding that's really based on bias and a lack of understanding. And it was so important for the military to look more deeply into the experience for transgender people and apply the very same criterion to transgender people that get applied to everyone else.
There's a second case, one in addition to yours, that seems to have found a sympathetic lawyer. A judge in the case filed in Baltimore by the ACLU said during a hearing yesterday that the president's actions were already having a negative effect on active duty personnel. Are you familiar with that, Shannon?
Yes, I was at that hearing yesterday, and that judge, like our judge in D.C., seemed to very clearly recognize that what the president has done is really harmful to transgender people. Yeah, I mean, transgender service members were completely destabilized, and, you know, their lives were thrown into chaos by suddenly being told that come March 23rd, which is when the ban was supposed to take effect, they might very well be discharged at any moment. So you bet. The judge in Maryland really got that, as did Judge Colar Catelli in D.C.
Jennifer, one of the White House justifications for the policy is the expense to the taxpayer of gender reassignment surgery for those who go through it when they're members of the military. Do you address that in the lawsuit?
Yeah, I mean, the military looked extensively at the potential expense associated with medical care for transgender people, and actually, in the words of the former Secretary of the Navy, determined that the costs were, quote, budget dust, that it's, you know, insignificant. And the case has advanced the position that transgender people's medical needs are, are just as worthy of being covered as other service members. But the reality is that, you know, the cost is negligible.
I know the question came up, don't they cover Viagra for active duty personnel, which they do, right?
You know, they cover medical care across a whole range of different contexts.
And here's a question from a listener that just came in on Twitter to these points. What does it cost the U.S. to fight legal battles bound to be lost, like banning transgender people from the military?
Oh, yeah. The cost of defending this policy is going to be exponentially more than the cost of providing health care to transgender service members. And then there was also the Palm Institute did a study and found that it would actually cost nearly $1 billion to train and identify, train, and replace service members who are transgender people who are serving in the military right now. I mean, if you're just going to look at this from a purely financial point of view, this is utterly irrational. It makes no sense at all.
Eric in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
I'm an unrepentant Trump voter, and yet I've always been in support of the gay and transgender community. We went through all this with gay people, and they were going to ban them from the military, and then now they're in the military, and they're serving with honor. And this seems like we've already walked this road, and it seems thoroughly unfair that when we're condemning people who kneel at football games as being unpatriotic, we're condemning someone who is patriotic enough to want to serve the country, no matter what their gender.
Eric, what makes you, if I may ask, an unrepentant Trump supporter if you hold this view? Because so much of Trumpism seems to be spewing this, you know, white, cis male kind of identity politics.
Well, you know, I have an issue with people telling me what pronouns to use. I have problems along those lines, but I also am an NRA member, and I'm a hunter. As a matter of fact, this weekend I'm going hunting up in Vermont. And I'm afraid of losing my gun rights, and I'm afraid of a government that wants to take away my guns, because every time in history I've seen anyone take them away, it's been a disaster, vis-a-vis Pol Pot, Stalin, Hitler. Anyone you can name who's taken away guns has ended up doing a lot more than that for against his own people. But as far as transgender people go, yeah, it's hard for me to understand someone who wants to have their genitals surgically removed, but it's not me. It's not my job or my right to condemn or approve of them. They are who they are.
Eric, thank you so much. And we could have another conversation about whether your AR-15 is actually going to defend against the U.S. military if they're coming to your house for something, but that's another show. Shannon?
Well, I just want to say I'm so glad, Eric, that you called, and I think probably a lot of Trump supporters feel exactly the same way you do about this particular issue, and I hope you'll share that with the president. I actually think that could really make a difference.
Are you a little grateful in a funny kind of way that the president seems to govern by tweet? Judges don't seem to like that.
You know, I just want to say this case is about a tweet, but not only about a tweet, because this president certainly communicates in that particular way, but also has followed up with White House memorandum making very specific the details of the change of policy. So, you know, I think it is important for people to know that there was this dramatic change in policy, and that was the way in which he got that message out to the general public.
We'll take one more call. Melinda in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment to the first caller who asked a very thought-provoking and I think really relevant question about, you know, mental capacity to serve. I'm the family member of two transgender individuals, and so I've tried to educate myself on this topic. And one of the things that I don't think was adequately responded to in that caller's question was the difference between sex and gender. They are different. And I think many transgender people do not perceive themselves as changing their gender, rather they're have always felt that they were the gender that was not their sex at birth. And so it isn't so much that there's a change as affirming who they genuinely are. And I think that's often misunderstood, how sex and gender are two different constructs.
Thank you very much. Either of you want to comment on that?
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. This is really about transgender people being who they being allowed to be who they have always been. Yeah, that's a very good point.
You know, looking back at the history of people serving in the military, I mean, before women were allowed to serve, women would pass as men. This goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War. Those stories have emerged. And there's been a line that's not been straight, but it's been in one direction of anybody who is patriotic or motivated enough to serve in our military, regardless of their status as a human being, just sort of who they are, that's not related to their qualifications to serve, being allowed to serve. There are some bumps along those roads, but hopefully this is just another bump.
Yeah, I will say there's a good reason for that direction that the military has headed in towards the full reflection of our American society, and that is because the military is stronger when it reflects the diversity of our communities, and it's weaker when there is perceived to be a difference between the society that the military is protecting and the military itself. And so, yeah, the history is removal of restrictions for people on the basis of race and gender and sexual orientation. And I'll also just say it's absolutely unprecedented that there's been a group who's been allowed to serve and then has been excluded after demonstrating, courageous, brave, valorous service.
Thank you, Jennifer Levi, Director of GLAAD's Transgender Rights Project, and Shannon Minter, Legal Director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. We will certainly follow this case through the courts. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.